Hi, welcome to the Natural Alternative Podcast. I'm your host, Madonna Guy, and I'm here today with my twin from another mother, Linda Hoggard, from over the sea in beautiful New Zealand. New Zealand, did you hear that? Yes,
well, New Zealand. Linda. Oh, well done. Well, I was going to put on my Australian accent for you.
Oh, very good. When are you going to do it? So, Linda and I have both been naturopaths, kinesiologists, herbalists, structural therapists for, 20, 25 years. And we've known each other all of that time.
I'm 25 and you're 30 years because we both did this in our 20s. So you've been 5 years more senior.
Experience is amazing. So we were chatting about what we'd like to talk about today. And because natural alternatives are our life, we want to chat to you about the alternatives out there and how to find them, because there's lots of good stuff available.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, I can't stand the word alternative medicine because a lot of what we do is really based on biochemistry, and it's really like the science of how the body works. And, it's functional medicine. Yeah, absolutely. Kinesiology is another kettle of fish that gets a bit different. But, nothing can argue with the results that we're seeing with people over
absolutely.
The years.
Mm. And you sort of work, like me, you work with people with really chronic illness.
Yes. I think once you've had the experience we've had and start getting a real handle on, you know, chronic fatigue and autoimmunity, that they come out of the woodwork, I guess. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I'm pretty sure the levels of autoimmunity and chronic fatigue are actually, you know, they're getting worse, and certainly seeing younger people than ever with quite complex autoimmunity conditions than what we were seeing, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely. And that's been something I've said to a lot of young naturopaths, because it frustrates me when I'm on the groups on, say, Facebook, and they're asking such basic questions. A lot of young naturopaths don't have the core understanding of how the body works and how to look at the real basics. You know, what do we need to detox? What do we need to employ to allow an organ to heal? What do we need to change in the diet? What is out there that's creating these toxins that are making people's lives so miserable and unhealthy and painful, you know, instead of pain-free?
Exactly, and the changes that can happen in the immune system with the different dominances of the T helper cells, you know. So, you know, sometimes I quiz, you know, people getting started, and if they can't answer some of those things, I'm like, just go and do some extra study specifically on that so that, you can get your head around it. Otherwise, it's very easy to think, oh, so-and-so, you know, they've got lupus, they need zinc, but of course zinc upregulates that dominance, and the next thing, they're worse than ever, and you're not sure why. But I suppose to anyone kind of who hasn't kind of learned that's a whole area that's really well understood and to explore.
And because the medical system is inserting themselves into naturopathy training these days, like here in Australia, for example, about 7 years ago, several of the big universities in New South Wales were given loads of money in order to start teaching, for example, that vaccines are natural and how to include them in a natural lifestyle, which was very interesting because it basically was a bribe to change the way that natural university training actually worked. It was quite a huge shift.
Yeah, to try and change that narrative. Yeah, as an interjection. Yeah, yes. It's like a mother with neurosis interjecting neurosis psychologically into their children.
Yeah, you know? And like we've seen in the last 2 years, you know, there's been such a huge shift away from believing in natural immunity at all. It's hardly been discussed anywhere.
Yeah.
And every time I discuss it, I get shut down. I have my page taken off.
It's quite frustrating. I guess like you, I have a lot of friends and colleagues and we all think the same, and then everyone now and then just goes, no, but this is my only option, is to have, you know, this protein recipe interjected into me. And I'm like, well, it's not, you know, you've got your white blood cells, you've got your humoral immunity, and you've got the ability to drop your abdominal weight, because we know that certain viruses that drive bad cytokine storms are driven by interleukin-1b, interleukin-6, and tumor necrosis factor alpha, and our abdominal weight pumps out inflammatory compounds, and it particularly pumps those three, and it's like a perfect storm. So hence we're sort of seeing these comorbidities happening around obesity, diabetes, heart disease, etc., because what's one of the biggest common denominators is this increase in abdominal fat and abdominal circumference. We've known for a long time, you know, that with every centimeter that your abdominal circumference increases, how that changes your outlook with your
health. Yes, and I can't remember it in centimeters, but I know if you suck your tummy in and do it with a measurement, you need 32.5 inches or less for a woman and 34.5 inches or less for a man. Yep. And then over that, we're increasing our inflammation. And once we hit that BMI of 30, our tummy actually becomes the major endocrine hormone producer of the body.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Morbid obesity.
Yeah.
30% body fat. Yeah. And that thing of, you know, once we're carrying 20 kilos of fat more than our ideal weight, we're producing 28 inflammatory compounds that we shouldn't be producing.
Exactly.
So it's a big load. Yeah.
It is a big load. And I think, especially the last 2 years with people working from home, people being so stressed, people introducing external chemicals into their body, there's going to be a lot of people who are putting on weight because fat is an insulation tool. So that's one of the other things it does, is sops up toxins.
Yeah, and we've got all the increased kind of cortisol going on just from the chronic kind of stress load. And I do observe that every time there's issues in our supermarkets here with people, you know, doing extra prepping or something, they clean out all the wheat flour and the sugar in the baking aisle. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to help.
I know every time people have said there's nothing at the supermarket, I've had no problem finding what I want.
Yeah, because we're shopping on the outside of the aisle. So, I mean, you know, it's great. Like I really like kind of cooking and that sort of thing. But I guess, you know, my baking's very kind of gluten-free, sugar-free, paleo, keto kind of funky stuff, you know. So, yeah, locked up at home, you know, it's a nice thing to do. But, yeah, certainly just increasing the carbohydrate load adds to all that.
Let's have a chat about carbohydrates for a sec, because it's something that people, you know, the common thing people say is, well, how do I know what's good for me? Because everyone's got an opinion, you know. And, of course, they're using paleo, keto, and pardon.
I said, I've got some opinions.
Yeah, I know you do. Linda and I worked together for a long time, and there was a particular, can I tell the story about the bread? So I sent one of my clients to Linda when I was away, and this woman did not have any idea how much white bread she ate. And she'd had candida issues over and over. She'd had candida issues on and off. She was just short, chubby, apple tummy.
Fungal load.
Oh, my God. And it was funny because Linda said, right, what I want you to do for a week, don't eat any bread. And she used to do her weekly shopping, you know, for the whole family. Anyway, by the end of this first week, there were still 3 loaves of bread in the freezer. So yeah. She had no idea. She was just always feeding the kids, feeding a hubby, feeding, you know, and she was actually eating so much. And I can't remember your exact.
I thought it was going to be there was another girl that you'd been really trying to coach, and it was about fungal load. You know, because you deal with that a lot in our trade, and she just wouldn't cut the mustard with you with their diet. She just wanted you to sort it all out with herbs and supplements and things. And it's like, well, you're feeding it, and I got the job of giving her the hard word and things. Yeah, and she. I can remember her sitting where you are, like sitting in front of me, just being really cheeky, like, you know, oh yeah, I know Madonna wants you to sort me out. And well, I just wake up and I eat sugar laden cereal. Can't remember which one it was. Best I probably don't label it anyway. and then I often grab a donut and that night. I just went, oh well, for feck's sake, you know, that's just festering fungal food and you're just feeding it, you know. Was very obtuse at the time, but I remember walking out of the clinic, you go, how's she going? I said, well, she's going to wake up tomorrow, make an omelette, take leftovers for lunch and have protein and salad for dinner, because it was definite. And I know at one stage you got to ask to talk at the Naturopathic College on clinical skills, and they were all talking about how they would handle patients and things, and you were asked for some examples, and you gave that example, and they were all mortified because it's like, oh, how could you be so poignant? And you were just like, just wait and see. Like sometimes people are just so addictive and caught up in their bad habits, you got to shock them out of it.
Absolutely.
So,
and that's not even starting on the whole genetic modification and what they're doing to our food. I remember sitting in a Metagenics Congress, Obama was in, and they basically removed all funding in the states from the government to find out whether GMO foods were bad.
Right.
And I remembered sitting there going, right, that's pretty interesting, because at the time I liked Obama. And I think in the same thing they were talking about how they increased the amount of vegetables that had to be eaten at school. But in order to do that, they had made a piece of pizza, one vegetable serve. So you go, right, so these guys are pushing a really healthy diet. Eat GMOs and pizza, you know, and don't know. Yeah, so it sort of comes down to this, well, what can we eat? But anyway, yeah, so we need to cut out those big, awful carbs.
More food, less filler. You know, I've got an acupuncturist friend who has quite a good saying that, you know, and this is talking kind of generally, you know, that for most people who go on some sort of regime, whether they do keto, paleo, macrobiotic, whatever they want to call it, that ultimately they feel better, and it's because they cut out the crap, you know, because the crap is so inflammatory, and then they start focusing on more food, you know, and that's been my mantra with my people for years, more food, less filler. The filler is taking the place of the food that you should be eating to nourish your body, and it's also creating a lot of inflammation in your gut. And hence why, you know, you're on a seesaw and it's like this, and all you got to do is take that filler out and take the food, and you're like, oh, I feel so much better. You're a miracle worker. And I'm like, oh, just kind of common. It's sort of common sense. You know, I've had enough people over the years go, well, I don't know, like every day of the week I feel sick by lunchtime, but on the weekend I don't. And I know what it is now, is they wake up in the morning and they have like a very filler-based breakfast. And on the weekends, they might get up and make themselves an omelette. And, you know, one's food, one's filler. One's very anti-inflammatory and can be very hard to digest.
And once people start seeing that connection to their diet and their food, then it makes it easier for them to stick to it. But it takes a little while. And do you remember when we were down in Melbourne doing a leap course 10 years ago and we were at that Indian restaurant? I think you were eating brains. But...
I had just finished breastfeeding, so I think it's 17 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
And there was an Indian woman in the Indian restaurant. She had skinny little legs. She had a big fat belly, like classic insulin resistance syndrome X, that look. And she was telling us about her pancreatitis. And we started saying to her, well, what do you eat? And she, of course, said, well, Indian food is very good for you. And she started telling us how she would start her day with, you know, pretty much naan and rice and a bit of veggies.
Yeah.
And I think she did the whole, we told her what to eat. I think you were very vocal. And the next night we went in there again and she'd had the best day. She felt fantastic. More energy, less pain.
Less brain fog because she hadn't spiked her insulin with all that unbalanced carbohydrate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we need those good fats. You know, those good fats are so important, and there's so much misinformation, medical misinformation out there about fat. And, and you know, our brain is 70% fat. If we're having fat-free diets, we're really screwing with ourselves.
Yeah, and our cell membranes are, you know, got like just these masses of fats in them and are full of kind of pumping electrolytes. And, you know, we know that one of the, you know, first signs of the body, you know, potentially going into cancer is dropping its electrical charges on the cell membranes. Yeah, and that's got a lot, you know, minerals and fats.
Yeah. And I'm seeing a lot of that when I do live blood at the moment, the cells being really sticky. So they've lost that zeta potential on the cell wall. So they're losing that electrical charge. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which there's all sorts of reasons for that, given current climates.
Very
interesting times. Yeah. And, of course, one of your huge areas of knowledge is around stem cells.
Yes.
So how would someone know if their bone marrow are not releasing enough stem cells and getting to where they need to go in the body?
Oh, probably just that they're older than the age of about 25, 30, and that they're experiencing their body kind of aging at a greater rate you know, than when they were younger, because essentially our stem cells and our bone marrow migrate out, and they are the way our body rebuilds and repairs itself. And once we're over the age of 25, the general consensus in the scientific community is that this stem cell migration slows by 5% per year. And there's a compound that anchors the stem cells in our bone marrow called alselectin, and it gets stickier as we get older. So, I mean, there's lots of examples. There's, you know, I think of people who've got, you know, genetic heart conditions, you know, and they're fine and they're 20 and 30s and they're like, I'm never going to end up like my dad, look at me, I'm great. And then they get to 50 and it's all catching up, and it's catching up because they can't rebuild and repair at that rate, and they've got some sort of, you know, enzyme disease glitch that's increasing the degeneration rate, and their stem cells aren't migrating to pick it up, and it's catching up with them. And the rest of us just get to experience that as you know, falling off your bike or spraining your ankle, you know, with every decade that becomes more of an issue. But
are we born with all the stem cells we're ever going to have?
So we're born with our mother stem cells in our bone marrow, and our stem cells have their own way they duplicate. They don't duplicate the same way that our cells in our bodies duplicate, where we have a mother cell with two DNA strands, and that creates two daughter cells, and you get one of the mother's strands and a copy. A mother stem cell in the bone marrow, when it's stimulated to duplicate, it creates two daughter cells, and the daughter cell that stays in the bone marrow becomes the next mother cell, keeps the original DNA, and then the daughter stem cell that goes out into the body has a duplicate set of stem cells. It's called progenitor cell theory. It's a very good explanation of it on Wikipedia with a great kind of chart of it. And so that's why we don't run out of stem cells, because essentially if we don't have any stem cells, like what can happen if they get nuked to the end of their life, if you've got acute myeloid leukemia, everything in the bone marrow gets killed off, and that's why you need a stem cell transplant, because within 3 days you're dead otherwise.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, it's highly necessary stuff. And it explains, you know, it's a big part of why as we get older, things kind of fall apart, because the repair mechanisms aren't there. But as you know, there's a product that kind of rules my life, and I spend a lot of time training and helping people around the world to get that naturally increases your migration of stem cells. I can see 4 bottles on your shelf.
So we'll put a link up.
So I think you're using quite a lot of it at the moment, based on the fact that our heart has a very high requirement for stem cells, and often when the heart is calling out for repair, it's very inflamed, because inflammation is in those areas are signals from the immune system going, hey I'm damaged, I need help. And the help, a big part of the help is the stem cells coming to become new heart cells, and it's not happening. So, getting those stem cells in migration so that your body can pull on those resources is, like, really helpful.
And one of the things that I love, if I understand it correctly, and you'll have the correct terminology, I like the basic, is that the area in your body with the most inflammation is the area where the stem cells are going to be sucked into.
Kind of potentially. So sometimes, so there's a double-edged sword to that. So yes and no, because inflammation in the body actually damages the receptors on the stem cells. So sometimes they can be honing, because when our bodies and our cells need more stem cells, they release compounds like granulite colonizing stimulating factor and stromal drive factor 1. And so the stem cells are honing on it, but the receptors have to work. And so that's where you can get a real compounding effect. You know, if someone gets quite a bit older, and I think we've all known people in their 70s, 80s and that are really taking their later years in their stride, they're really active, then they might have a car accident and they break their hip and they just turn into an old person very, very quickly. And they get this compounding effect that there's not enough stem cells in migration for the repair, and they're lying down. So I think if you lie down at 70, you lose the same amount of muscle mass that you would lose in a week lying down for a year at 20.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's part of the or that BMI training that we did yesterday, years ago, that's those statistics. So you get this compounding just catabolic process where the body's breaking down, it can't rebuild, it hasn't got the stem cells, it's got compounding inflammation.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, if you support those people with more resources and the ability to increase their own kind of stem cells, it can be a totally different outcome.
Yeah.
But yeah, it compounds the inflammation with it. So my observation is, you know, that people have been around on the planet for a while, they might be generally feeling okay, but there's stuff that needs catching up on, and their journey taking the product often leads them to feeling like that they feel, you know, fitter and their brain's clearer and those sorts of things. And then that all might happen in the first few months or so. And then those really inflamed knees that they might be wanting to target, you know, they then pick up on those resources later on. So yeah. It's a different journey for everyone. And the heart and brain has a huge daily requirement, a bit like the pancreas for stem cells.
Mm. Uh-huh. The pancreas is copying the beating at the moment as well. But yes,
anyway. Yeah.
Did you see the interview with Professor Stephanie Seneff and Joseph McCullough?
No.
About neurological damage associated with current shenanigans on the planet? Anyway,
no.
Worth a watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, I know someone I know was posting kind of recently that they have a number of people that they know hospitalised from neurological issues that have just popped up out of the blue.
Yes, it's pretty interesting and sad. And I think hopefully the experiment will be over soon now that the FISA documents have been released, you know, with all the side effects that they knew, you know, April 2021.